Yesterday, I happened to chair two meetings. One was at 9 o'clock at night, is when it started. I'm like, I can't believe this. It's going to be so, I was just really late. I'm a little tired.
Started recording whenever you guys are ready.
This it? It's just five of us?
The recordings will be made available for all NA members. So
got it. Okay. So am I starting? Is this how we're doing it?
Sure.
There's no format or nothing. We'll start with the readings, I guess. All right. Hi, my name's Kat. I'm an addict. I guess we will go ahead and start with the couple of readings that we chose to do for this particular meeting. If you want to pull them up. I guess I'll read who's an addict. Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another. The getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We lived to use and used to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same. Jails, institutions, and death. Do I read all the readings?
I'll read what is. Okay. My name's Ezra. I'm an addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There's only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Did Chris or Cindy want to read how it works? Sorry, I can't get all the whole names here.
I'm Cindy and I'm an addict.
Hi, Cindy.
If you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. These are the principles that made our recovery possible. One, we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. Seven, we humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Sorry about that. Only our knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to the addict, to addicts, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you.
All right. Hey, everybody. My name's Catman Addict. So the topic of this meeting is young addicts in recovery, I believe. Me and somebody else were asked to share. So I guess I'll go first. My clean date is August 1st of 2019. I was 22 years old when I got clean. I was almost 23. My birthday is in October. I started using when I was 13. And I'm not going to talk about what I use because, you know, it says in our readings that it doesn't matter what or how much you use, who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much, how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how you can help or how we can help. And, you know, I think that's very important because when I first came in and I heard people sharing about what they use, I'm like, you know, I compared myself. And I think when you're coming in, or even if you have been in for a while, it's very important not to compare yourself to other people, because then you start thinking you're different. And, you know, Narcotics Anonymous is all about unity and finding the similarities and not the differences. So I started using at 13. Obviously I didn't get clean till I was 22. I knew the first day that I used that this was going to be a roller coaster. You know, I instantly knew that, okay, I need this every single day. And it, from 13 to when I got clean, it was just, I would draw lines in the sand, you know, and they talk about the progression, and it really did progress for me. I'd say, okay, well, I'm not going to do this to get high. And then, you know, later on I realized, okay, I gotta cross out that line in the sand because I crossed that boundary. So let me draw a new line in the sand. And every time I did that, you know, I would always look at the things I said I wouldn't do. And I finally crossed it. I would look back at it and I would justify it and say, oh, that wasn't that bad. So let me draw this new line in the sand. And then every time I cross it, oh, that wasn't that bad, until it got to where I had no more lines to draw in the sand because I had crossed every boundary I ever had for myself. And me and my sponsor were actually just talking about this the other day. You know, it's a vicious cycle when you're using, because, you know, for me, I hated myself. And then I got high because I hated myself. And then every time I got high, I would do things that would make me hate myself even more. So then I had to go get high again. And every time I got high, I would continue to do more things that I swore I would never do. And at some point I had to stop that vicious cycle because it was going to keep getting worse and worse. You know, when I came in, I despised myself. I honestly wish I wasn't alive anymore. I didn't come into the program necessarily because I wanted to. It kind of was, I didn't know anything about Narcotics Anonymous. The first time I went to jail, I was 18. And between 18 and 22, I had been to jail 6 times. The last time that I went to jail, well, the second to last time I went to jail, I had violated my probation because I couldn't stop using. And I went and did 6 months. And then when I got out, you know, I swore I wasn't going to do my drug of choice, which I found out that, you know, I can't use anything because it's going to, yeah. So I got out. And not even 2 weeks later, after doing 6 months in jail, I was right back in jail in 2 weeks. It only took me 2 weeks. And, you know, this time I knew I was going to prison. There was no question. I'd been to jail so many times. My you know, criminal history is quite lengthy I was only 22 at the time. So my grandma bonded me out, and, you know, my mom blocked my phone calls. My parents were done talking to me. And when my grandma bonded me out and she picked me up and I got in her car, she looked at me and she said, "You're going to rehab or I'm revoking your bond." And that was the first time my grandma put her foot down. And I kind of looked at her like she was crazy, because I'm like, do you not know who I am? Like, do you not know what you're trying to do right now? Because that's what we think as addicts. Well, that's what I think as an addict. Like, do you not know who I am? Like, who you're dealing with? So I go to my grandma's house, and, you know, and I end up sleeping for 3 days because I'm withdrawing. And when I wake up, she's on the phone and she's like, we're going to your parents' house to get some of your stuff and I'm taking you to rehab, or they're coming to pick you up. And so I tried to fight it. You know, obviously I didn't want to go. And she got on the phone with the bail bondsman and was like, "Hey, I'm revoking her bond. I need you to have somebody to come get her right now." So I'm like, oh no. Okay. She's for real. Let me get in the car. Let me do what she says. And, you know, I had it in my mind, I'm going to prison. So I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to look at rehab as a little 30-day vacation before I go to the big house, because, it, you know, it is what it is. I didn't realize going to rehab that my whole life was going to change from there. And so I go to rehab and, you know, I'm withdrawn for a couple, you know, like 2 weeks. And I go to the first NA meeting that they have there. And I'm so grateful for H&I because they saved my life. And, you know, I'm still kind of going through the withdrawals and the motions as I'm sitting in this meeting. And I just hear this person share. And even though her story wasn't exactly my story, the parts of it that were similar hit home for me. So not everybody's story that I've heard it's exactly like mine, but the parts that were really that I could really relate to is why I kept staying, because it seemed like every person that shared had a little piece of my story, to where eventually, once I heard enough people share, I've heard my entire story shared through multiple people. And I think that is so amazing in Narcotics Anonymous, because you don't have to have the same exact story. And there's so many people, like if you're going through things, that I could be going through this thing, but I know at least one person in this meeting has gone through it that I could go to for advice, and they've made it through it clean, you know? So I did the 35 days in rehab, and I decided, I believe it was like 3 or 4 weeks in, that when I get out, I'm from Polk County. And I was calling my mom. I said, I don't want to come back to Polk County. And she was like, well, where are you going to go? And I'm like, you know what? I don't know. I just know I don't want to go to Polk County, because that's where I know every street. I know every person. Like, it just wouldn't be good for me. So my grandma looked into some halfway houses, and I moved out to Clearwater, which was, you know, it's about an hour drive. So my family could still come see me, but I wasn't close enough to be able to go back into my old territory. So I got out of rehab and I moved into a halfway house in September of 2019. And I got to get a drink. Hold on one second. So I moved into the halfway house and I was still out on bond. I was still out on bond. I didn't have court until November 1st. And, you know, from there, I started going to meetings outside of rehab. And, you know, I got a job and I really started learning some things. I think I got a sponsor when I was like 40 days clean, because that's what you guys suggested for me to do, was get a sponsor, because I didn't know what I was doing. I know I couldn't trust what I was thinking to do, because my first, second, and third thought is usually wrong. So I got a sponsor and I started working some steps at a very, very, very soon, like early in my recovery, I was working steps. And that's not for everybody, you know. It just was something for me because I feel like I needed to do that at the time. So court comes. And when I went into court, my attorney said the only offer was 38 months in prison, which is a little over 3 years. And I just remember feeling defeated. I remember, you know, my addict mentality came back in like, oh, well, I've done. Don't you see what I've done? Like, look at everything I'm doing. And you're really going to. And because at the time, I couldn't accept the fact that even if I'm clean, I still have to face the consequences of the things I did in my addiction. And I wasn't okay with that at the time, you know. And then somewhere by the time he was talking to the state attorney and I gave him my papers that I went to rehab, I accepted the fact that, you know what, if I got to go to prison, you know, I at least got 3 months clean and maybe I can go in there with a little bit of hope. So he comes back and the offer changed because I went to rehab and they gave me 30 months of probation. And I've never been able to complete probation before. This was my third time on probation. The first two times I violated because I couldn't get clean. But it was different this time because I was clean and I was doing something about my problem. So I accepted the probation and they allowed me to transfer to Pinellas County because that's where I was living. In December of 2019, I moved into a different halfway house just because it was closer to my job and my license was suspended. I was taking 4 buses a day to get to and from work, 2 buses to get to and from a meeting. I would walk to meetings. I would ride my bike to a meeting. I would make sure to get the meeting list where everybody write their phone number. And I would call people. And I'm a shy person. Like, I don't like calling people. That, you know, and that was the scariest thing, I think, for me when I got clean, was the drugs allowed me to become somebody I wasn't and allowed me to be like the, you know, the life of the party, because I was never that. I was always like shy and let me be in my little shell. And the drugs allowed me to become that. So when I got clean, I was like, how am I going to socialize with anybody? Because I'm such a, like, normally I'm a shy person. And so that was really scary for me. But you know what? I did everything that I needed to do. And I came out here. I never rode a bus in my life. I got on the buses, you know, figured out how to get around, how to get to work, do what I had to do. And then in January of 2020, I was offered the position of house manager at the halfway house I was living at. I was almost 6 months clean, and I accepted it. And I learned so much doing that. You know, you got to help the newcomers who come in, and it allowed me to get out of myself and to help the people who, you know, they were just coming out of jail or they were just coming off the street. And I was able to share my experience with them. And I can't even explain the feeling when, you know, you see somebody come in and they're at their worst, and a couple of weeks later, they've got that light that flicks on in their eye. You know, like, okay, I finally get it. This is what I need to be doing. It's just, it's the most beautiful thing. I can't even describe it really in words. So in May of 2020, I realized after managing the halfway house that I want to make a career out of this. You know, I want to be a substance abuse counselor. So I enrolled at St. Petersburg College, where I'm still attending. I have maintained a 4.0 GPA for three terms. You know, and that's like huge for me because I didn't even graduate when I was supposed to. I dropped out my senior year, and I only had one credit left to get, and I dropped out. I did later on end up getting my diploma. So I think that's why I'm taking college so seriously, is because, like, I know that I'm not trying to say, oh, I'm smart, but I do know that I'm smart, and, you know, and stuff like that comes easy to me. But I gave up in high school because I was on drugs. You know, and looking back, it sucks. But at the same time, like, I really do feel like I had to go through everything I went through to get where I'm at today. And I'm grateful for the experiences I've gone through, because that's what's made me the person I am today. And you know, I think that's what the 12 steps are about, is to help you to accept the person you are and where you've been and where you're going, and to not, you know, be ashamed of what you've done. So I ended up, where was I at? So in August, I ended up getting my license back, and I was able to save up money to buy a car. And, you know, and that was great, because now I'm driving around, and I've been waiting to get pulled over, because I'm excited to be like, yes, officer, you can search my vehicle anytime you want. Cause I've always been scared. Like, when I see lights come on, I'm going to jail. I've never gotten a ticket. Every time I've gotten pulled over, slapped on handcuffs, and I'm, you know, I've heard people say, oh, I'm allergic to drugs because I break out in handcuffs. Yep, that's me. like every time. So, you know, that was really exciting for me to get a car and, you know, get my license back and stuff. And so let's speed up to this year. I had a lot going on. I got a new sponsor. I've had a sponsor since I was like 2 months clean. And not the same sponsor. You know, I've changed my sponsor, I think, three times now. And not because it was more just because, you know, it wasn't working for me. But as soon as I dropped one sponsor, I had a sponsor on, like, I already had one. I didn't go without. And we've been working steps, and I'm on the fourth step now. And, you know, it's just really amazing. I've done steps 1, 2, and 3 times. And it's amazing to see, even though, you know, I got a little over 19 and a half months clean, it's amazing to see when I worked the first step, the first two times, how things have changed so much just within that little bit of time that I've worked the first step, you know, because then I'd start over and do step one again, and I'd start over, and reading back on, like, when I did my second, the first step the second time, it's different than when I did it a month ago, you know, and that's why working the steps isn't just a list. And once I get to 12, I'm done. You restart, because once you finish, you're going to be in a whole different space in your life than where you were the first time you worked the steps. So I am excited to get, you know, through the steps and stuff, and continue to do them and just see how dramatically everything in my life changes and where I can apply the spiritual principles I've learned in my life. So fast forward to this year, like I said, I'm still in college. I finally moved out of my halfway house. And I'm renting a room. My two roommates, they're also in recovery. And so I lived in a halfway from September 2019 until I actually just moved out 2 weeks ago. So March of 2021, which is an extended period in a halfway, but I knew that was something I needed because I had nowhere else to go. And, you know, I wasn't working a decent enough job to be able to move out on my own. And I didn't want to make the impulse decision that just because I get annoyed sometimes in a halfway that I need to leave. You know, and I'm glad the way I did it. And it was like, I talked to my sponsor about it and all that. I tried to get a job in a rehab facility, and I was, you know, they're like, oh, we don't care about your charges. Everything's going to be fine. Well, when they ran the background, because I was still on probation, they couldn't hire me. And that really sucked because the manager of the whole like facility is the one who interviewed me. And she's like, yeah, I'll vouch for you and your charges. I think you're great, blah, blah, blah. So that was kind of like a slap in the face. Like, you told me you would hire me. And then all that. So, but you know, it's okay. Because at the end of the day, now looking back in hindsight, because I wasn't able to get hired, and I realized I have to wait 3 years after I get off probation before I can work in a rehab to file an exemption, I brought that to my attorney. And I said, look, I'm not trying to early terminate because, you know, I'm trying to get off and go do what I used to do. These are the reasons why I want to terminate. And he brought that to the judge. And, you know, he's like, I don't think he's going to early terminate you because you have prior felony convictions and all this. And I'm like, okay. And I accepted it. And I turned it over to my higher power because I was working on that step to turn things over. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not even going to stress it anymore. It's yours. I don't want it. And sure enough, as soon as I turned it over, I got an email saying I got a court date. So I'm like, all right, that's weird, higher power. I see what you're doing. Just hold on. So I go to court. And the first, I'm my last name's a W. So I was the last person on the docket. And I watched this judge deny motion after motion after motion. You know, sentence somebody who has the same charge I had to 15 years. And I'm just sitting here like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? So it finally gets my turn and the judge tells me off rip, you know, I don't early terminate people with prior felonies or a lengthy history like you have. And I'm like, great. Well, I don't even know what I'm doing here then. So my attorney said, you know, I just want her to testify on her behalf and let you know what she's done, where she's going and why she wants to get off probation. So I prayed before I spoke. You know, the judge is like, I'm not going to deny her right to, you know, speak. So I prayed and I said, you know, just let your will not mine be done and just speak through me to this judge because I don't even know what I'm about to say. So I shared and I explained to him everything I've done and what I want to do as far as a career. And he looks at me and he looks at my charges and he says, you know, I never do this, but I'm going to grant your early termination. And when I tell you, I cried my eyes out to this judge. It was like, oh my gosh, because I literally just watched him deny everybody's motion. He wasn't letting people bond out. He was, you know, and this judge has been my judge for 4 of my cases. It's not my first rodeo with him. He knows me. So that was like a God moment for me. I was finally like, you know what? I turned it over. I let you have control. And, you know, I accepted whatever the outcome was going to be. And so, yeah, so I got off probation, which was huge because I've never successfully completed probation before. I ended up getting a new job. I was working as a field manager for an irrigation company for 6 months and finally got a job in an office, which is great. I love it. You know, but I realized that I had to work so hard in the beginning of my recovery to get where I'm at now. And I'm grateful for all that. I'm grateful for having to have a hard labor job because it showed me that I had willingness to fight for my recovery, you know, to chase my recovery like I chased the dope. You know, I'm just extremely grateful for the person that I am today to kind of touch on, and then I'll wrap it up with this. You know, being young in recovery, like I said, I was 22 when I got clean. I'm 24 now. I think the hardest part for me was when I came in, I didn't see a lot of people my age. You know, it was kind of like all older people. So I kind of felt like I didn't belong, but I didn't let that deter me to not stay. Because I made sure to live my whole life. I've always, if I seen somebody do something and they failed, even if it was something bad, like drugs, I thought, oh, you know what? I could do that better than you. And it was a challenge. So let me accept this challenge and show you I can use drugs better than you can. And I don't know why that's the insanity of my disease. So when I got in recovery and I heard people say, you know, you got to change everything about you. Your people, places, things, you know, you're not going to be the same person you were when you came into the rooms. And I'm like, well, gosh, that's all I know. I mean, I was 13 when I started using, which is the age you're supposed to figure out who you are. Like, all I know is me on drugs. So I was scared. You know, I'm like, who am I going to become? I don't, you know, I'm not even going to know who I am anymore. And I think once I accepted that, you know, I think I hated myself so much that really, if I became something else, it had to have been something better than what I already was. Because I was already at my limit. I hated myself. There's nothing anybody could tell me. So, you know, and I made sure to listen to people who came in and shared and said, you know, I came into the rooms at 20 and I went back out and I didn't come back till I was 40. I listened really closely to those stories because when I got clean, I wasn't, oh, I can do this better than you. I was, okay, let me learn from your mistakes for once in my life. Let me listen to somebody else. Let me actively listen to what they're saying so I don't make the same mistakes as them. And I think that helped me tremendously in my recovery, making sure to reach out with people who had time, sharing where I was at. You know, you know, I remember going in meetings and sharing when I felt like getting hot because I've seen other people do it. And if that's what I got to do to stay clean, then I'm going to share in a meeting that I felt like getting hot, you know, because we're addicts and you can't just expect when you get clean. I can't just expect when I get clean, I'm never going to think about using again. That's what I did for 9 years of my life. You know, it's inevitable. I'm an addict. So I'm really grateful for the program of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful for my sponsorship family. I'm grateful for meetings. I'm the GSR of my home group in the Bay Area. You know, service is very important to me. I haven't started sponsoring yet because I haven't gotten all the way through the steps. But as soon as I do, you know, I really look forward to sponsoring people. I kind of felt like I was sponsoring people when I managed a halfway because, you know, they all come to me, they're new and they're asking questions and I would take them to meetings. But like I said, I'm of service by going to meetings. Anytime somebody asks me to share a meeting, I do it, even if I'm really nervous and I don't want to do it, I do it. Because I was told never to say no when somebody asks you to be of service in NA. And I feel that who am I to, you know, this was all freely given to me. So who am I to not give it back to the newcomers, you know? So I'm going to keep working a program. Like I said, I'm really grateful for where I'm at today. And thank you guys for letting me share.
Okay, I guess I'm next. My name is Sophia and I'm an addict. Okay, I'm gonna just change the gallery view here for a minute. It's just a lot easier for me to share. I think I said, hi, I'm Sophia, I'm an addict. I'm not sure if I did. I always get a little nervous, I guess, when sharing, but I wanted to stick to the topic and the theme, you know, being young in recovery. When I got clean, I was 17. I was pretty young and I've been clean now for 31 years. I live in Brooklyn, New York now. Before that, I lived in Florida for many, many years. I lived there for a very long time, about over 25 years. And before that, I got clean in Dallas, actually. A lot of my, you know, addiction was out there. People who knew me using, all of that was out there. And pretty much most of my adult life and growing up and, you know, getting a driver's license, getting a GED, getting all those things. A lot of that stuff manifested itself in Florida, actually. But and just a little bit about my background is when I got clean and I first came to NA, I didn't get clean until 1989. When I first walked into the rooms, it was 1988. And I went to Wes Davis Group of Narcotics Anonymous. And West Davis Group Street, it's a street in downtown Dallas. And it's not too far down the street from where I actually used to go to high school. And that was like very early on, it was brought to my attention that that's like an old, you know, you need to be careful going back there, you know, to an old high school, to like old friends, to, which was true, you know, it was, you know, a lot of drugs there. You know, I couldn't foresee myself staying clean there. You know, the big thing was, you know, being 16, 17 years old, walking back into the fellowship or trying to get clean was, you know, go to high school, you know, get your education, you know, go to school, you know, that really wasn't a realistic option for myself. But when I got clean, you know, I was at home, but I was also living with other relatives, staying with other friends, you know, the whole using thing, lifestyle. And, you know, I grew up with my dad using and I saw him all the time using, gone sometimes for months or years at a time, just didn't see him, really didn't talk to him. It's only actually been very recently, the last few years, I've talked to him consistently on the phone. And he has advanced Parkinson's now. He's in a home. I don't know why this always makes me emotional. But a big part of why I'm here is because of my dad. Even though my dad was using, he helped me get clean. And he pulled me out of a dope hole. He knew where I was. My dad always knew I was using. And he was an addict himself. And he couldn't get clean, but he helped me get clean. And he drove me to my first meeting, this West Davis group meeting, when I found out about NA. My family, it was just very, very difficult. My parents were very abusive towards one another, very abusive towards us. My dad, not physically abusive, but my mother was. But my dad, he just wasn't there, And, sometimes we didn't have electricity and food and all those things. And then sometimes my parents worked and then we had electricity and, it was just very odd. Looking back, when I got clean, or when I was getting clean and staying clean, I realized that that wasn't normal. Like, it wasn't normal not to have water, It wasn't normal to, always kind of be in fear of where we were going to live or not live, or, and I was so young too, I was just so young. I remember asking my mom, when did she think that I had a problem using? And she said, it was when you were 13 years old, when you were in middle school. And I got busted with drugs when I was there. And I was asked to leave school, or I was suspended, went back to school, and it just continued on, until after I was in high school. I was asked to leave 3 different schools at that time. And, as I was saying, I was using and didn't feel the need to go back, or didn't really want to go back because I was afraid that I was going to use. But getting clean was when I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, going to this West Davis group in 1980, when I got clean in May of 1989, I started doing what they told me to do for a change, and went to meetings every day. And I had all the excuses, right? I didn't have money, or didn't have a way around, or, my dad was using, I would always throw that in there. Couldn't really get out to a meeting. We don't have a phone. I almost died using, 3 times. Part of my story is going to the hospital, going to the hospital again. And, one time I went to the hospital, it was actually in Fort Worth, Texas. I lived in Dallas, but I lived in Fort Worth. And it's funny, you were talking about your grandma, because I stayed at my grandma's house, and because I knew grandma would kick me out, I was like, take mooch off of that right there, let me keep milking that for as much as I can. And I was like her favorite, and I knew that. My grandma didn't speak any English. I come from a Mexican family, and I know some Spanish. But it was just like, one of my other cousins stayed there too, and he was also using. We were using together. And it was just really, it was crazy. So almost died when I was there, OD'd, and went to, so in Fort Worth, Texas, my grandmother lived very close to John Peter Smith Hospital, which is the county hospital in Fort Worth. It's very close to there. So I was over to the hospital and then came back, and I was like, I'm done. I'm done. I'm going to die. I can't stop, And it, I had a job, of course. I was in school, had somewhat, friends. Nobody trusted me. Got fired from the job, I really didn't have much interest in school in that point anyway. I was just at this job, and everyone at this job in Dallas at where I was working, everybody there was using. And it was that was a very chaotic place as well. So when I stayed over in somehow one night I was using, and I wound up in another city, wound up in Fort Worth, you know, and then I stayed over at my grandmother's. And when I was there, then, you know, I was in the hospital when I got out. I thought, you know, this is it, you know, like, you know, I can't use anymore. This is like really nuts. Like, I really don't know what to do. And that's what I always remember thinking. Like, I just don't know what to do. I don't know how I'm going to get better. I don't know how I'm going to stop this, but this is it. Like, I'm going to stop. And I've been clean, or, you know, hadn't used in like in a day or two. And I remember a friend of mine called me, and it was actually my neighbor. And he said, "Hey, you know, do you want to come over and get high?" I was like, "Okay." You know, like, that's just the way it always was. You know, it was until the very bitter end. It was till almost death. I thought that, you know, I don't know, just lost, you know, lost, got a lot of hope. And so in the middle of all that, my dad comes to get me, and he's like, "You know, I'm picking you up right now. We're going back, you know, we're going back to Dallas." And I willingly went because I was like, this is, you know, I don't know what to do out here anymore. You know, I knew my, you know, I was in the, you know, the bottom, and went to Dallas. And then I signed myself up, or my parents signed me up, to a boot camp program. And then I went to boot camp for about 30 days. And it's not the kind of boot camp where you're like, you know, doing like push-ups in the mud, and, you know, you're go around, you know, but they did have these fences, like we couldn't leave, you know. And I was in there for a few weeks. And I was in there with a lot of other people who were on probation. I was in there with a lot of youthful offenders too, who were like 20 years old. It was like the age range was like 14 to like 21, I think it was. And I was in there because I was an addict. And there were a couple of the people I met at NA that were there, the counselors. But for the most part, like, really where I got a lot of my, you know, hope and, you know, what to do was when I came into Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I remember that facility, they said, you know, your life is going to get really boring when you get clean, you know, you're going to have to get used to that. You know, you're going to have to get used to this, like, you know, not living this kind of like really intense lifestyle, like almost like all that almost dying, that stuff was fun, you know, but as you know, and again, these were people who were in recovery. They just didn't understand, you know. Then when I got into recovery, and as I was in this boot camp program and I got out of this boot camp program, I was introduced to this, it was called Dallas Youth at Risk, I think is what the name of it was. I don't even remember anymore. Dallas Challenge, that was the name of it. And there were also other people who were mandated to go to these meetings. The counselors were not in recovery, but one of them had the forethought to call Narcotics Anonymous. And then there was a guy that came out, and he had 6 months clean, and he was by himself. And I used to know his face very well. I don't remember it anymore. I wish I did. I remember he was about 40 years old, maybe, not maybe not quite. I remember he had a light polo t-shirt on. We lived in the inner city in Dallas, and back in the 80s in Dallas, it was just very hood back then. It was just a tough place, you know. He didn't live there. He lived in the suburbs, not with that white polo shirt, you know, and he had a car, you know, they drove up in, and he's like, "You know what? I've been clean 6 months, and I've been going to NA meetings, and I'm in recovery. And, you know, these are the drugs that I did, and this is my story." And I thought, wow, you know, if that guy can get clean 6 months, maybe I can stay clean for 6 months. And he said, "You know what? I'm going to come back. I'm going to give you these meeting lists, because I forgot them. They just opened up an NA meeting down the street from here." I was like, okay. And the first thing I thought was, you know, this guy's not going to come back here, you know. And we were, you know, when I look back at how we, you know, we just look like a bunch of hoodlum Latin gangsters, you know, it's like, that's just kind of how we presented, I thought, this group. And he did, he came back. And then I remember he put the meeting list on the cork board, and that's how I got to my first NA meeting. And I've been coming to NA ever since. And that was my first meeting, like I said, 1988. I eventually found a sponsor and I struggled, you know, staying clean my first year that I was here. And then when I, in May of 1989, it was like, okay, you know, I, whatever anyone tells me to do, I'm going to do it. You know, I'm going to go to meetings every day like they told me to do, finally. I'm going to call someone before I pick up, finally. And there have been some close calls, you know, like that first year, you know, letting go of the old friends, letting go of the old places, letting go of, it was, you know, it was a process, you know, it really was. I started working and living on my own, you know, pretty quickly, you know, very young, because I knew that, you know, where I was at, it was, I was just going to have more freedom, you know, in my life. And it was just going to be more productive for me staying clean, you know, if I got out on my own, you know, so I did that, you know, pretty early on. And how I wound up in Florida was, and I wouldn't recommend this, you know, to getting clean and staying clean. I traveled the Renaissance Festival to Florida and I started traveling, you know, across the country. And I was with another person who was in recovery and we would go to meetings wherever we were, you know, but it is like a, you know, a party lifestyle. There's there at, back then for sure with people that were local and the fairs and people who were traveling. And I just like stayed away from them, you know, I just stayed away from them and I worked and then I would go home and I would sometimes work a second job wherever I was and I would go to meetings. And so Florida at the time seemed it was an easier place to just to relocate to. So I relocated to St. Petersburg. I think it was in 91, I think. And as I was there, it was, I don't know, it just seemed like it was just like easier. It was a lot easier living in a bigger city that was much more expensive. It was easier. I just kind of fell into a job. My intention was never to stay in Florida. I thought I would just work for a while or whatever, and then I just go back, you know? And then as I stayed there, it was, I got to know more friends. I got to know more people. And let me say this, like my first sponsor that I met in 1988, she knew I wasn't staying clean. She just kept being supportive. She kept taking my phone calls. She gave me my first basic text that I still have today. She said, as I was, I don't want to say improving, but as I was staying clean and I was sitting in the front of meetings, because meetings were pretty big back then, I would say. I remember she was like, hey, Sophia, you know, I need to talk to you, you know? And I was like, wow, this is great. And, you know, she's going to really, she's seen how much I screwed up like this past year, you know, didn't follow suggest, you know, all those things, you know, and she would always like bring it to my, you know, in a loving way, bring it to my attention. And she's like, you know, I always see you at this clubhouse. You know, there's lots of clubhouses in the Metroplex area in Dallas-Fort Worth. You need to get out of here. Like, you need to stop going to this meeting all the time. And I was like, geez, you know, like staying clean, I'm doing good. You know, I thought I was gonna get a big pat on the back, you know, for doing the right thing, you know, doing what I was supposed to be doing, you know, not like robbing people and drugs, you know, doing things illegally. Anyway, so she said, you need to find some young people and you need to get out there and you need to go to a young people's group. And how my sponsor, I really believe it's just, this is just a spiritual process, you know, like how she had the ability to push me in that direction, to tell me to do that, you know, it helped my recovery immensely to go outside of Oak Cliff, the inner city. And I started going to these meetings in the suburbs and it was like night and day how those kids lived comparison to me. It was, you know, in Dallas at that time, one of the wealthiest suburbs was Plano, Texas, in the country. Like people there drove Beamers to school. It was ridiculous. Like I never had seen that much wealth. I had never had seen mansions like that. I had never, and I just felt really like, oh my gosh, you know, but they struggled too with using. There was like, it was just definitely a totally different life. However, I made friends and I got phone numbers, you know, I started going to these, you know, to these, you know, to meetings. And Or, you know, she told me also, she's like, if you go to a meeting and you see a young person there, you reach out to them, you talk to them, you know? I mean, it is true. Like my first meeting, everyone was about my age now. They were in their 40s, you know, which, you know, we always get a chuckle out of this, which seems very ancient, you know, when you're like 16, when you're a teenager, you know, it's just like, no one leaves to go to do coffee. No one leaves to, they're going home to their family and raising their kids and they have to get up and work the next day, you know? Not that I didn't have responsibilities, but it was just very different. So I went to that meeting and I'm still friends with some of the, you know, some people today, a couple of people. And so I've stayed clean since then. And I've done a lot of traveling, you know, got my education, you know, slowly. That's a whole nother story, you know. I took one or two classes, you know, when St. Pete was a junior college. Then take one or two classes and I transferred over to the University of Florida. And I slowly took classes there. Then I went back to the University of Florida and finally got my degree. I've had lots of different jobs. I have worked traveling with my jobs. And, you know, I do remember, like, you know, a long time ago, you know, being younger, the program was, you know, you'd hear, you know, I would hear a friend or I know someone who, oh, you know, I just got back from Chicago. I'm like, how'd you just get back from Chicago with your job? You know, well, my job pays for me to travel, you know? And I'm like, wow, you know, I remember thinking, wow, that would be like the job that I want, you know, like I need, you know, I'd always had seen Dallas, you know, for, when I got clean, getting clean expanded that. And it wasn't just, it was my sponsor that helped me expand that. You know, it was my sponsor's influence to tell me to get out of there. And my experience was, I saw my mother, my father, my sister, lots of people get arrested when they left the city of Dallas. You know, that was my experience. And was in cars while I saw my mom being handcuffed and taken away for different things, you know, with friends throughout the years. And I really thought if I left Dallas, the city in Oak Cliff, that I would get arrested. I really thought that. Like, I thought I don't belong there. I don't belong in the suburbs. They're going to tag me, you know. And with the people that I was with at the time, those things were probably true. It really just like opened me up. And then when I started traveling, I opened up even more, and then I want to live more places. And then the sponsor that I have now, she's been my sponsor for, oh gosh, over 25 years. And before that I had about easily 25 sponsors, easily, you know, so I've had about 50 sponsors, my recovery, I would say. I think once I wrote it down, I was like, have I really had 25 sponsors? I did. And, you know, back in the 80s and the early 90s, because no cell phones and all those things, if I moved or if she moved, it was just understood, hey, you need to get someone who lives here. And I was so, you know, I was so new, I was so young. It was so important to have somebody local, you know, that knew me. And when I moved to Florida, I had my Texas sponsor. She's like, look, I think you need to get somebody there. And then I did. And I had three sponsors move, I remember. I had one sponsor that went to somewhere in the Midwest. She's like, Sophia, you need to get a sponsor here. You know, I was devastated, you know, that I had to get a new sponsor. But I learned so much from all of those women, you know, and I've learned so much about women, you know, women in recovery. I have heard, you know, this lie that women don't stay clean and haven't been clean long and they don't know the steps and bullshit like that, you know, and I have, like, I'm just almost shocked by that, because, you know, when I first got clean, my sponsor was clean 2 years, and that's all I needed. I was a newcomer, you know, I just needed someone to help me with the steps that was clean, that was going to teach me how to be clean for 2 years. Now I got past that 30 days, right? That first guy that came in and shared it in that facility that I was in. And the next part was, okay, you know, like, I really want to be clean 2 years, you know? And my friend, my sponsor, Vicky, I believe she's still clean to this day too. I've lost contact with her throughout the years, but you know, that's all that I needed, you know, just, and I cheered, it just kind of happened where I cheered two anniversaries yesterday on Zoom for like an hour and a half meetings or an hour and a half in New York. And then if you're chiming in early and you stay a little late, that's 2 hours, you know, or longer, you know, it's like, geez, man, you know. So, but it, you know, just the way it is out here, I really like the meetings in New York. I like the content because of, there's always a speaker. You always get to hear someone's message. Like, thank you for sharing, Kat, by the way, and for going first. I really enjoyed your story and I enjoyed what you had to say, you know, it's, you know, just really, you know, brings you back, you know, about, you know, what we went through when we first got clean. And to throw age a factor in there, I feel like Narcotics Anonymous has done a really good job with the literature, you know, with the stories in the basic text, with the IPs, with, you know, reaching out, you know, to the new person. I think the next hurdle that we have in the fellowship sometimes, or what I saw when I was in Florida, was there are a lot of young people in recovery in Florida. You know, there are a lot of, you know, when I lived in St. Petersburg, I felt like I was aging out of the fellowship almost, you know, when I was there. And when I moved to New York, I thought, wow, I'm going to feel maybe like the odd duck. I don't know. You know, when I go to meetings in Brooklyn, it just, when I think of New York City, I think of like 25, 35 year old people, you know, but there are a lot of people here with a lot of clean time that are retired in New York City. And I was kind of shocked by that, you know. The fellowship isn't what I thought it was going to be, you know, age-wise. So there are a lot of people here that are my age, actually. There are a lot of, you know, middle-aged professionals, if you will. I don't know, you know, people with families, people with, you know, working on, you know, another college degree. And it's very exciting. You know, it is very exciting here. It's really tough. It's been a very difficult year for me because of the pandemic. And I've had family members pass away. And because of the pandemic, and my sponsor's husband, I was very close to my sponsor and I was very close to her husband. He passed away last year in June. And because of recovery, because of growing up here, because of becoming a mature, responsible person, not to sound so cliche, but I had the opportunity to go down there and to help my sponsor and to sit next to her while he passed away. And that was really eye-opening, a very eye-opening experience, you know, because I had never had seen that before. So I keep going to meetings. I keep reaching out. Sometimes it is true, you're clean for a while and you get a little, I don't know, become a fuddy-duddy about things, you know? And then you just get a little like, I don't wanna talk to that person, you know? But you know, we do it anyway. And I've been sponsoring someone who's, she's clean 90 days. And she got clean here on Zoom, and she lives out in Long Island, which that's a ways from here, from where I live anyway. It's like over an hour, could be an hour and a half sometimes. And we talk on Zoom and I go to her home group and she usually comes to my home group. And it's, so, you know, it's possible, you know, I've seen people do it. I've seen people get clean on this platform right now because New York City, we got hit so hard with the pandemic, you know, there were 700 people a day dying here, you know, it was just really scary. And my job shut down and buildings shut down and people got laid off. And now we're slowly, you know, of course, you know, getting back into a normal, some kind of a normal mode, you know, we'll see, you know, how this goes. But this has really helped me out a lot, is doing this on here, on this computer, because I'm a meeting maker, you know, I've always been like that. Even when I didn't stay clean that first year, I kept coming to meetings, you know, even though I used, I would come back and I would go to another meeting. But now that I've stayed clean and now that I have something to give and I'm like the quality of my life, it's less chaotic. It's a lot more peaceful. It's a little sad these days because, you know, we stay clean and you see people go away, you know, people die, you know. I'm close to, you know, a lot of, I guess my mentors, a lot of the old timers in this fellowship have been clean 45 years, you know, that's a long time. And I'm, you know, really grateful for that, you know, really grateful I've had the opportunity to be around people who are still here, but I'm going to stop with that because I feel like I've been going for a while now. And I thank you for being here. And thanks again for Kat for sharing your story. I appreciate it. And that's it. Thanks. Love you guys.
All right. Thank you both. We have about 5 minutes left in this workshop. So if anyone wants to raise their hands and share real quick, or I guess if you guys are willing to entertain Q&A.
I'm Cindy and I'm an addict. I thank you both for your stories. I didn't get clean young, but now I haven't. I heard Kat talking about how when we do steps, you know, things change. And even for me, at my age and how many times I've worked steps, it does change. There's other things that I learn about myself and stuff that just comes to light that I guess I'm ready to explore. So, and I think that's a wonderful thing. And it is a motivation for me to continue working steps. And I realized that, like Sophia, you got clean when I was first in treatment. I didn't stay clean, but that was the years that I went into treatment when I first was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous. I've had my husband's two children, two of his kids have passed away this year during the pandemic of addiction. So, you know, my interest in wanting to listen to young addicts is kind of driven by that. And I do some service here in the Orlando area and trying, you know, I just want to learn. I want to hear young addicts sharing their stories. You know, I heard you all. God bless you that you stayed. Kat, I heard how young you were, and I can relate to that watching these young people in and out of jail and treatment centers. And you know, we talked about it last night. I truly believe in the jails, institutions, and death. And for them, the jails and the institutions were it. Death was what was left, and they didn't get clean. They didn't stay clean. So being with you all and listening to you today, it's been nice. And, you know, we have to, I heard someone talking about the feeling welcome in the meetings. And, you know, the third tradition means a lot to us. And I know that as an older person, that when I see young people walk in the meetings, how I make sure that they're welcomed. And I can relate to their using. You know, some of the drugs are different today than they were in my time. I always say they have different names. The effect was the same. So our recovery is the same, and our stories are definitely similar. And I, you know, God bless you all. Hang around. Reach those young people. It's cool. It's very nice. So thank you.
Thank you, Cindy. Okay. Kat, do you want to take us out with a prayer?
Hi, everybody. I'm Kat. I'm an addict. Thank you for joining us, me and Sophia, at this meeting. I definitely got a lot out of it. I feel like every time I share, if nobody else got something out of it, I got something out of it. So let's go ahead and end with a moment of silence followed by the third step prayer. Many of us have said,
Take my will and my life.
Guide me in my recovery. Show me how to live. Keep coming back, y'all.